Do the trashy pulp novels of the world have anything to offer? Are bestsellers all they're cracked up to be? Here at Terrible Book Club, we explore whether you really can judge a book by its cover or its ridiculous synopsis. You ever passed a book and thought, ugh, who's reading this? We probably are.
Hello and welcome to episode 189 of the Terrible Book Club. I'm Paris, and this is Chris.
Hello.
This time, we bring you a review of Hope Never Dies, an Obama-Biden mystery by Andrew Schaefer. This is another popular one that folks have asked us to read many, many times, but it took a brave patron to finally force us to do it.
It took money, really, is what it is.
It took money. You can all thank Miles May, one of our pesky publishers, for making this happen. Thanks so much for your support, Miles, and we hope you like the episode. If this is your first time listening to this show, what we do here at the Terrible Book Club is read books that we assume will be bad based on their cover, title, summary, or some combination of the three. Sometimes we read books that our patrons, listeners, or friends recommend, like we're doing today. So we typically do the opposite of what most people do when they're in a bookstore or while they're browsing the internet, and usually this experiment results in a disappointing and hilarious read. But once in a while, we do actually end up liking the book. Today's show includes our usual barnyard language, plus malarkey and some drugs and violence, but it's not too bad.
Which I would classify that under malarkey.
You know what? You're right. Maybe drugs and violence are a subcategory. All right. I'm going to go ahead and read the back of the book summary. This is what is usually literally printed on the back of the book or, you know, shared around in advertisements to sort of pull you in, to get you to pick it up and read. Vice President Joe Biden and President Barack Obama team up in this high-stakes thriller that combines a mystery worthy of Watson and Holmes with the laugh-out-loud romantic chemistry of Lethal Weapons, Murtaugh, and Riggs. Vice President Joe Biden is fresh out of the Obama White House and feeling adrift when his favorite railroad conductor dies in a suspicious accident, leaving behind an ailing wife and a trail of clues. To unravel the mystery, Amtrak Joe re-teams with the only man he's ever fully trusted, the 44th President of the United States. Together, they'll plumb the darkest corners of Delaware, traveling from cheap motels to biker bars and beyond, as they uncover the sinister forces advancing America's opioid epidemic. Part noir thriller and part romance, Hope Never Dies is essentially the first published work of Obama-Biden fiction, and a cathartic read for anyone distressed by the current state of affairs. This was
published in 2018 for perspective, so we're 2 years into the Trump administration, and everyone's whining and shitting and crying, so this came out, you know.
Crying and shitting and throwing up and all that.
Yes.
Okay. So for our characters and setting, I mean, the setting is just Delaware, generally.
It really
right?
is.
Like they're just kind of bopping around.
Honestly, points for that, because when is anything ever fucking set in Delaware? It's at least interesting.
Except like corporate headquarters, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Don't they have like lax tax laws or something there? Why does why doesn't Trump have companies in Delaware then?
Probably too dumb. Like he doesn't even know what he's doing. Let's just be honest. He probably doesn't know what a Delaware is.
Yeah, if he... that's true. That's true. Sometimes I forget what a Delaware is, to be fair, so...
Mm-hmm. Okay, so our characters, we got Barack Obama. You all know him. And you also know Joe Biden. We also have Secret Service Steve, who is Obama's sort of like, you know, post-presidency protection detail that's hanging around and kind of shaking his head at the antics that Obama and Biden get up to. We have Finn Doherty, Joe's favorite railroad conductor, who is the body, essentially, in this presidential Law and Order episode. We have the Murdertown Marauders, Delaware biker gang. And we have Dan Capriotti, cop buddy of Joe Biden. And Abby, who is a private investigator for insurance, for a life insurance firm that had an insurance policy on Finn. So she's out there investigating stuff for them. And that's pretty much it. Kind of a small cast of characters. I mean, like, Jill Biden pops up, like, once. And,
yeah,
like, Michelle Obama is, like a disembodied pair of crossed arms. Sort of like,
yeah,
you know, Obama's always like, the wife's going to get mad if I do this. But, like, that's about it. So I wouldn't call them characters.
Yeah, there are some other accessory characters like Finn Doherty's daughter and his wife and, you know, some of the biker gang, you know, get individual names and stuff, but they ultimately aren't super important.
Yeah.
All right. So because this book just felt like, I don't know, sort of trying to make American politicians cool, you know, in a lot of ways. So I've tried to honor this flavor in the summary that Chris is going to read for you. This is a summary of all the major plot events. So even though you probably have not read this book, hopefully this will give you enough context to understand our review that will follow. So Chris, take it away.
Biden is in a situationship with Obama, but at this point he's been straight ghosted. Barack is out here hard launching with all his cool guy friends on Instagram, and all Joe can do is think about his decaying boomer body. Obama only shows up at Joe's house for a political intrigue booty call, and Joe is a little hurt, but it still leaves him simping for more Barack, and simping for mystery. He starts to dig into the case that Barack brought him, the untimely and suspicious death of one of his favorite Amtrak conductors, Finn Doherty. Eventually, Obama and his Secret Service detail, Steve, join Joe as they follow clues all over Wilmington. They get tangled up with Abby, a PI the insurance company hired, and a biker gang, the Marauders. Joe is worried about tarnishing his dead friend's name because he might have been using or running heroin, or both, and maybe even committed suicide for insurance money to help his family. It turns out Finn didn't kill himself, but he was running heroin on Amtrak since, as a conductor, he had unfettered access to the Eastern Seaboard and knew security protocol well enough to evade detection. However, he was only doing this because he had been targeted by the gang themselves and because his wife was dying and they had mountains of medical debt. Ultimately, the real villains are private health insurance in America and the dirty cop Dan Capriotti, as he's the one who killed Finn and stole his money and his drugs and was covering everything up with more murders and lies. He gets hit by a fucking train and then shot though, so don't worry about it. Barack and Joe talk about their feelings and decide they maybe have a soft launch of their own coming up. Also, Joe Biden 2020, pew, 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 yay, let's go.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Beautifully rendered. All right, so that's what we got going on today. Let's start with our first section that we normally try to touch upon real quick up at the top, technical construction. We're talking typos, formatting, punctuation. I gotta say, Chris, on God, it was perfect. No notes.
Yeah, nothing to say here. And again, like, recently it's been feeling like, oh, we just keep doing this over and over at the top of these episodes with this new rubric thing that we're doing. But again, it sometimes it's a very cogent point we have to make. But a lot of the times this is just the easy breezy startup. So 1 point in this book's favor
for being
a book.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't even think it's easy most of the time. Maybe just lately we've been getting some that were at least crafted with some thought and edited. I mean, this was well written, I would say. Like, yeah, I had no issues with this. It was tidy, paced well. It was great. Great in that respect. No issues, no notes.
Which is surprising considering this is... You know, it's fan fiction, right? Like,
yeah,
that's what
but
we're
it's a mass market thing, right? So,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure we can get into the gray area between like what counts as fan fiction and what's like, you know, is that a different thing than a published work? Because, you know, most fan fiction is just published serially on websites, and it's not so different in today's world, honestly, especially with like the Amazon thing they've been doing with like, you know, serialized releases.
Yeah.
So it's very gray area, but point being, dude did fine here.
Yeah, and
no notes.
We'll read some excerpts when we talk about the prose quality and dialogue. But for now, just know that from a technical standpoint, this was perfect. All right, for plot and characters, we are going to talk about the general coherence of the story, and then character quality. You know, are the characters just paper dolls? Do they have depth? Do they make any sense as humans on Earth? And is the story just generally make sense? Are we talking Swiss cheese here? Is it just utter drivel? How are we doing with this? So in terms of coherence, I feel like it made a lot of sense until the bad guy got hit by a fucking train and then could still walk and hold a gun for like another 5 minutes.
Wasn't he like a little burnt too? Yeah. Wasn't he like a little bit crispy on top of that?
He was. Yeah.
I feel like if that series of events happened to me, I'd be going ow quite a bit on the ground instead of like trying to like stand up and like finally get Joe. Like he doesn't really have to kill Joe at that point because he's going to be pretty fucking hospital. Like it's over, bro.
Right, right. Well, and I think so I get that the author added this as a nod to ridiculous noir, you know, and action films. But they spend the whole, like, not the whole book, but there are many moments in the book where they're like, oh, man, getting hit by a fucking train. There is no way anyone can survive that because it goes this fast. This is the impact. Like, they stress this numerous times. So to have the bad
like
guy
really letting you know that getting hit by a train is bad.
It is
you shouldn't
the
let
end.
That happen.
It is the end. It is not survivable for so many reasons. And then to have the bad guy get hit by a train and survive was like, you could have had, they could have done it any other way. I feel like that was a bad choice. But otherwise, the rest of the story, honestly, makes a lot of sense. I mean, makes as much sense as it can. Like, you have two people who in this country would have the resources and time to just fuck off and go do, like, an investigation on their own and have access to, like, weapons, bulletproof cars, like, all this stuff. Honestly, I was like, yo, this kind of adds up, though. Like, if you're going to write this about anyone, the former president and former vice president would... Yeah, I believe it.
I also, like, the scale of it is kind of nice. Like,
yes.
You expect
yes.
a Biden and Obama mystery to drag off into some Tom Clancy shit real quick, right? You want them to, you expect them to be involved in, like, global spy networks and the Russians implanting sleeper agents in places.
Right.
Which, honestly, would not be crazy unreasonable either if you wrote the book from that perspective. But it's a relatively small-scale drug smuggling mystery that involves, like, a friend of Biden's in a way. I did have a little trouble deciding, like, how close of a friend they really were. Were they just, like, talking on the train here and there? But I feel like they might have, like, hung out once or twice. So it made sense.
Well, I think because Joe took Amtrak so much and Finn had worked on Amtrak for 30 years, 40 years, some very long span of time. So small conversations over decades, I guess, can add up to a friendship, I suppose.
And I just want to commend the author for keeping the scale reasonable, right? Like, it never spiraled out into anything ridiculous. And it didn't even spiral out in directions that I thought would make it very silly. So this book walks a fine line of silliness. I feel like it almost teeters over into being a little bit ridiculous, but it's kind of very self-aware about it and knows just when to pull back to keep it in the realm of, like, it's a little silly because, I mean, we're reading a book about Obama and Biden solving a mystery together. No matter what you do, that's going to be a little bit silly. But, like, even there's one scene where they're sharing a motel room, right? And there's one bed. And I had this, like, scary moment where I was like, this isn't the type of author that would have been fucked, right? Right? Like, this isn't that, right?
Oh,
like,
no.
It's just like,
oh,
I've been burned so many times
throughout the history
of this show that I was like, I know it's possible. I know that's in the realm of possibility, but please don't. And no, they just, you know, share a bed together because there's one bed and there are two adults that can just, like, hey, man, let's just sleep.
Yeah. Man, that just reminds me about, I know I've told this story on the show before, but the time that I first discovered what fan fiction was, and I was like 14 or something, and I was like looking up information on heavy metal musicians and came across a fanfic where someone made them vampires who fucked, and they were both men, and I was like, I was reading it, and I was like, wait, this isn't real.
Wait, what? Wait, how long did it take you to figure out that? Wait a minute.
Well,
Alexi Laiho isn't a vampire, right?
Yeah, it was like, it was Alexi Laiho and... Was it Thomas Hallopainen from Nightwish? Was that the thing? I don't know.
I don't think it really matters for you to get this memory accurate.
Yeah, that's really stupid, though. And I just remember thinking, like, why would anyone do this?
Wait, did you think, like, this was some kind of journal entry that you had stumbled upon?
No, I didn't know what it was. I was, I don't know, I was a kid. Like, and this is the internet 21 years ago, so not the internet we have now.
Yeah.
And I was just sort of like, I don't remember what I was looking up or how I came across it. I think, I don't know, but someone
you Googled
out there.
You Alexi Laiho vampire sex, didn't you?
No, definitely not. No, for so many reasons. But somebody out there was like, oh, these guys are both from Finland. Let's make them vampires who have sex. And I just was like, I don't understand why this is happening. Like, I don't know. And I was like, why do people do this? And I just, I don't know, just immediately was like, this, I hate this. I hate that people do this. This is terrible. So thanks, Andrew Schaefer, for not making Joe and Barack fuck in your fan fiction, because so many people
also
succumb
for
to
not
that.
Making them vampires. Like,
yes!
It's so easy to just slip
Thank
into
you.
Like Joe Biden and Barack Obama vampire lovers.
Yeah, actually, thank you also for not making them vampires. Or some like very grounded fan fiction. This is what I, it's not what I crave, but it's like fine at 2 a.m. You know, it's like Taco Bell. Thank you for this Taco Bell book.
I guess if I have to eat something, I'll read the Obama and Biden mystery.
Actually, I full
Just
disclosure.
Just keep the vampires out.
Full disclosure, I don't eat fast food, but I fucking love Taco Bell. So like whenever, like a couple times a year, if I'm on a long drive, we're belling. We're going to the Bell. And it's going to be great. Did you see their new menu items they announced this year? Incredible.
They're announcing a new menu item like every 3 months. I feel like they're like, we crammed the potatoes in the tortilla again, but there's a different hot sauce combination.
Chris,
we're calling it something different.
There's a Baja Blast pie.
Wait, no one needs that, man.
I
like,
do.
No one
I
wants...
need the Baja okay. Blast pie. I want to get blasted by the Baja.
Oh, you
want to
get
form.
Baja Blast pie raw?
They're also going to have chicky nuggies for all the idiots who don't like beans and cheese and rice. There's going to be...
What's in the Baja Blast? What are they just pouring Mountain Dew in a crust? Like, what do you mean?
I mean, it's probably like any custard, right? You just make a custard with the Baja Blast flavoring and then you put it in a pie shell.
Okay, I don't know if I trust Mountain Dew custard, but it's no better than anything else at Taco Bell.
No,
so.
Taco Bell is just fucking good. I will... fight you.
It is. I'm just, but like, it's not like amazing. So it's not like you're going to take a slice of Baja Blast pie and be like, oh, wow, I got to make this at home.
I don't know. Maybe. They also have introduced.
Yeah, you know what? Fair. I haven't tried it. I shouldn't be shitting
right,
on it already. Maybe
yeah.
It is actually amazing.
They've also finally.
I've never liked any Baja Blast anything. I always hated that shit.
I don't drink soda as a rule. So it's exciting to me to be like, I can have soda in pie form, I guess. they've also finally embraced tahine seasoning, which is, it took far too long. Like, fucking put tahine on everything. Anyway, Terrible Book Club, not sponsored by Taco Bell. Wish we were, though. Wish we were. Moving on.
You're about to write some Taco Bell vampire sex fan fiction, right? Where the last
somebody,
pie
well,
has sex with the Gordita Supreme and their vampires somehow.
Oh, no. The dog would be involved, wouldn't it? Chihuahua.
Oh,
that's the only mascot they've ever had.
Where's he been,
so...
man?
I think it's a she, actually. I think she's dead. I think it's the answer.
Well, I mean, yeah, most likely that. But I feel like they would, like, drag another Chihuahua in for...
Yeah.
It was probably just a little too racist, right? Like, they pulled
yeah.
back on that. But back to the story here.
Character quality.
Again, thank
now
you
I
for,
just
no, for not...
Ma- burritos. God
yeah.
damn.
Thank you for not making them vampire sex lovers. Instead,
or either. Yeah, one or the other or both. Thank you.
Character quality in general is actually pretty good. I would like, you know, for putting two people that are very public figures in here, a lot of people, when they do this fan fiction thing, they really don't maintain the voice of
yeah,
that character well, especially
true.
When you're making them vampire lovers, which is not happening here again. And both Barack and Joe are believable versions of themselves.
Yeah.
This whole book does feel like someone playing with their Obama-Biden action figures in a way, but someone who, like, has studied their characters and has, like, a believable playtime with them. Like, Barack is generally down to earth and to the point, but a little quippy,
mm-hmm.
as he was and is.
Yep.
And Joe is kind of like boomer with a heart, which is the vibe that I've always gotten from Biden.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I agree with you completely. I think they are very believable and well done. And like, he did really try to give Biden like a glow up in this, though. I mean, it seems like he really, Schaefer seems to really stand Biden for, like, there's a lot of, this whole book is from Biden's perspective, so you get a lot more of Biden than you do of Barack or, you know, Secret Service Steve or whatever, which is part of it. But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, there are times, excuse me, there were times when I was reading this and I was like, man, this is a little like, hey, let's forget these American politicians are war criminals and murderers. And
yeah,
like,
I mean,
you know, it's definitely,
there is a little bit of extrajudicial torture happening later on in the book.
That's
There's a touch
true.
Of that. So also in character.
Yeah. Yeah. We did keep a little bit of extrajudicial torture just as a treat. And yeah, but you know, it definitely does a lot of PR work. Even though I don't think that's what, that's not how this was originally conceived, to my knowledge. But, you know, this is very much like if Biden was smart, he'd probably start talking about this book again on the campaign trail, I guess, because it certainly paints him in a very glowing light. interestingly, it often talks about Biden's struggles with old age and, you know, just physically getting older, mentally getting a little older, but it doesn't do it in a way that denigrates him as a character or a person, which I thought was surprisingly nuanced in such a ridiculous book. And yeah, I don't know. So anyway, as a book, just thinking about character construction quality, great job, Andrew Schaefer. You really, really did it. But you know, you then also have to think about the other side of this, which is like, do we need to glorify American politicians who do horrible things? Probably not. But I don't know that that was the intention of the book. I think this was just, you know, a 2016, oh no, we have entered hell. What can I do to alleviate some of this pain? I know. Let's write this silly book and give people something to laugh and smile about and remember a time when things are better. Make America great again. Is what.
Oh, fuck. Well, you went too far, Paris.
Oh, no. But it's sort of...
Paris, yeah. Before you move on, though, I had a thought. I don't know. Maybe not this author writing. Maybe this author writing it. Can you imagine a Trump trying to solve a mystery novel?
Oh, Andrew Schaefer wrote that as well after this.
Oh, there, good. Right.
There's
sorry.
A Trump one. Yeah, there's a Trump one.
I kind of want to read that one because it would just be Trump spiraling off into batshit insane theories about like what is going on here.
Yeah, I
was in character.
I forget what it's called. Hang on, I'll read the spiel real quick because.
But what would he care? Like, Trump would never care enough about someone else to like try to figure out who murdered them, right? Like,
yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Only if it meant he would be like included in the will or something if he figured it out.
That's true. If there was like a payout for him, he would probably try to get involved.
All right, so this one. Oh, I'm sorry. This one was actually before, oh no, the day of the Donald, Trump trumps America. Read the satire that boldly or foolishly predicted the Trump presidency from Andrew Schaefer, author of the instant New York Times bestseller Hope Never Dies. Ever conscious of his hugely important historical legacy, President Donald Trump plucks disgraced tabloid reporter Jimmy Burnwood, the man responsible for publishing the infamous Ted Cruz sex tape, from the depths of anonymity to become his official biographer, giving him enviable access to the gold-plated White House and all of its secrets. When Trump's previous biographer turns up dead, Burnwood must do some real investigative reporting, get to the bottom of a long series of murders, and, if it's absolutely unavoidable, save the country. The Day of the Donald, Trump's America, is a hilariously hair-raising look at the possible future of America. Holy fuck. Yeah, maybe we do need to read this.
So it's not even Donald doing the mystery solving. He's also just a background character.
Yeah, he's just
only
a setting.
Concerned about
he's just a drape. He's just drapes in the background, yeah.
Because there's, again, I can't imagine Donald trying to piece shit together like this.
Oh, yeah.
Ever.
Andrew Schaefer knows that. And he did the right thing. He just used him as dressing. But apparently this came out in 2016 before Trump was elected. So he was probably writing this, you know, a year or two before that. So interesting. Anyway.
I really don't like it when people are like, I predicted the Trump presidency.
A lot of people did. A lot of people looked at everything going on and said, yeah, that's probably going to happen. And then a bunch of people were like, no way, for reasons, because we don't know how to poll right. Anyway, I would love to talk about the data behind polling and the failures of that election year's results, but that's
this isn't
not
terrible polling club.
Yeah, this is a terrible polling club, although I would love to do a show called Terrible Polling Club. I guess 538 has a segment called Good Use of Polling, Bad Use of Polling, which is kind of that, but sometimes that show is fucking insufferable, so I can only listen to it occasionally now, since they've sort of, yeah, it's a mainstream news show about polling, but even the nerd in me can only get through so much of it. But Good Use of Polling, Bad Use of Polling is fun sometimes. I enjoy that segment. Terrible Polling Club, maybe that's the future. Are we predicting the future of Terrible Book Club? Is it just going to become Terrible Polling Club?
I don't think I have anything to contribute to that.
No, you don't.
So you have to find another co-host. I'm just going to admit right now.
Yeah, that would be me and someone else. Anyway, in any case, character quality is good. But, you know, I am always a little skeptical of books that glorify public figures that have some pretty obvious problems. You know, being an American president, you do have to sort of sell your soul to do a lot of things that are downright hateful and horrible. But anyway, let's move on.
So would you give this character, would you give this section a one?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So 2 points up this book.
All right. Prose and dialogue. Yeah. The prose quality here, you know, Andrew Schaefer is an acrobat atop a tightrope, and he is just walking that perfect line. You know, there's a chasm below of being too cringy, right? On either side of him, there's like being too cringy, and the other chasm on the other side is like not being self-aware, and he is perfectly self-aware. He is making fun of the genres of like noir and political action thriller. He's even making fun of satire, I feel like, and making fun of his, you know, his protagonist here. I think he pokes fun at Joe and Barack regularly enough. It's a really perfect parody, I think, of a political noir thriller. It's really well done. And so we can, I guess, Chris, if you have a couple things to say, you can talk, and then I will look for some examples to read from the text.
I mean, I agree with you generally. There's a bit of, you know, Biden silliness. Like when we say there's malarkey involved in this, like he speaks in that tone sometimes. And I think it's also like done just enough to not totally tip into silliness land. I actually have a passage I'd like to read that I think sort of encapsulates both that and sort of the noir thriller parody stuff that's happening here.
Yeah, sure.
So it's a little bit lengthy because I kind of want to get towards like the end of the chapter. I want to give the context that's happening here. I'm going to attempt to do my Biden and Obama impressions. They're not good, as none of my impressions are.
I was not warned about this, so I'm scared now.
Okay, so here we go. We approach the door to room 110, moving as stealthily as my bum knee would allow. Inside, the lights were out. The curtains were pulled shut. I put a hand on the knob and gave it a slight twist. It wasn't locked. Neither of us had a weapon. This was a minor problem. If somebody, the woman, had just broken into the room, this meant she was a criminal, and criminals carry guns. I wished I'd packed my pistol, but then again, maybe it was a good thing I had. If we really, truly ran into trouble, would I have been able to pull it out of my chino shorts without shooting off the family jewels? Barack would have a real field day if that ever happened. Barack placed one of his oversized ears on the door. Political cartoonists had loved to mock Barack's elephant ears. If only they could see him now, using them for God-intended purpose. "What do you hear?" I whispered. A pickup the size of a semi rumbled past the motel. "Well, I don't hear a thing," Barack said after it had passed. "Then I say we go in. Legally speaking, we're treading on some dangerous ground," Barack said. "This is breaking and entering." "Even if the door is unlocked?" Barack nodded. "Damn it," I said. "I don't want to start another Watergate." "We're not in the White House anymore. We're private citizens. And as private citizens, it's still illegal." "Even if the door is unlocked?" "I already said." The door swung inward. I tumbled to the floor and Barack tripped over me. We landed in a heap, a jumbled mess of arms and legs. "Can I help you?" I looked up. The lamps were off, but there was a thin beam of light coming from the bathroom, illuminating the room, just enough to see the curvaceous outline of a beautiful woman with damp hair down to her waist. She was wearing a white hotel towel. Just a white towel. Whatever Barack and I thought we'd seen her doing outside, we'd obviously been wrong. I didn't imagine many burglars stopped to take showers during heists. I tipped my hat to her. "Good evening, ma'am. We're looking for the pool," Barack said, untwisting himself from me. "We appear to have taken a wrong turn." The woman studied us for a moment. I might have been dressed for a pool, but there was no way Barack was going swimming in his navy suit. "He didn't tell me there was a pool," the woman said with a hint of southern accent. "Come on, Joe. We'll take it up at the front desk," Barack said. Then, to the woman, he added, "Sorry to have disturbed you." She maintained the bewildered look on her face as we quietly backed out of the room. "I can't believe you called me by my real name," I said in a hushed tone on our way out to the car. "I don't think she recognized us," Barack said. "I mean, we have these great disguises." "You're making fun of me." Barack slapped me on the back. "She can call all her friends. She can post about it online. Who would ever believe her?" I shrugged. "Yeah, you're right. Still, next time we run into trouble, we're using code names." "Next time?" Barack asked. "What are you planning?" I had only a vague idea of what we'd been coming here to do, and that vague idea was mostly hot air. We'd just busted it on some innocent woman because our imaginations had gotten the better of us. Neither of us said a word about it, though. We were too embarrassed. What was I planning next? Nothing, if I could help it. We returned to the car. Steve stepped out of the lobby with a key in his hand attached to a small wooden keychain. I rolled down Barack's window. "Let's make this quick," Steve said, passing the key to room 110 to Barack. The night clerk said we can take a look around. "What about the person in the room now?" Barack asked. Steve looked confused. "No one's staying in the room now. It's supposed to be empty." "Son of a buttermilk biscuit," I said, grimacing. "We got bamboozled."
Great. Great read, Chris. Good. That was like a 4 out of 10 Obama, which was like more than I was expecting.
Yeah, I'll take
so that.
That
was
my
good.
Biden wasn't anything. It was just my regular voice.
Yeah,
so I'm not going to pretend like I did anything there.
I can't do either of their voices. But yeah, so I think that
Barack,
was...
you just got to like talk from the back and like have a little bit of punctuation. You're just
yes.
A little bit authoritarian, a little bit, a little Christopher Walken, just a little tiny bit of just punctuating some words. I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this novel.
All right, I'm going to just read a couple...
Michelle, come in here. They wrote a book about me. Come on, check it out.
I'm going to read a couple parts where I actually, like, got a chuckle. Like, it was actually funny a few times. I was waiting like a cat on hot bricks at the counter of the Baltimore Penn Station lost and found. The employee had disappeared into the back room to search for the duffel bag. He was young, portly, and had a bad haircut. Most kids had bad haircuts these days. Too many of them looked like Hitler Youth. Heck, too many of them were Hitler Youth. I laughed because it's sad and true. there's another couple good ones. My SIG called to me from the closet. We were heading into a dicey part of town, possibly past sundown. I hadn't felt unsafe beneath the interstate, but that was then. This was now. The Secret Service agent would be armed. Why shouldn't I be too? I spun the dial on the safe, removed the SIG, and felt the gun's weight in my hand. Then I returned it. I realized I didn't need a gun. I wanted a gun. Instead, I pulled out my Presidential Medal of Freedom. That one fucking got me too. Let's see what else I got. This is Biden... you know, lamenting his situationship with Obama. I didn't expect to hear from him again. We'd had a great run together in office, but Barack had moved on to bigger and better things. He was too big for one country. Too big for one best friend. He belonged to the world now. I told myself I was happy for him. But if that was really true, why couldn't I shake the feeling that I'd been dumped the day after graduation? I don't know, it's kind of funny.
Like all of this stuff, I imagine if this was an audiobook and the soundtrack in the background was like sultry saxophone and pizzicato bass, like it would tip too far over into silliness for it to be like worthwhile. But on the other hand, it feels like that's the line that it's treading. Like I can kind of hear that soundtrack in the back of my head.
Yeah, it was. There were moments that I actually laughed. Like those are some of the ones that made me go, "Huh." Like I, you know, got a little chuckle, a little "eh" out of me, which is more than a lot of books we read do. So that was appreciated. And in terms of the writing, I think it's pretty good. The dialogue's decent. Like it's let me see. I'll just read an excerpt of dialogue between them at the beginning of the book. "You could have called," Barack shrugged. "It was a nice night for a drive. You also could have rung the doorbell." "I was thinking about it," he said. "Well, let us know you're coming next time and we'll have a cold beer waiting." I refolded the map and tried to give it back. "That's a copy. Keep it." I glanced back at the master bedroom window where the TV was flickering. The thought that Finn would ever stalk me was beyond ludicrous. Still, is there any indication Finn was part of something larger? Barack shook his head. "Not ISIL, if that's what you're asking. Service ran him through all the databases. Not a single red flag. No recent weapons purchases." "Are there any reporters on this thing?" "The accident? Yes. The rest of the story? No. The police are sitting on the case until they hear from Steve." "Steve?" "You passed him at the edge of the woods." "Secret Service," I said. "Friendly guy." Barack shrugged. "He gets the job done." Champ trotted to my side. I scratched him behind the ears. "Who else knows about the map?" "An engineer turned it into the cops, so it's passed through a couple of hands," Barack said. "There's a lieutenant working as the point person. Her detectives have started legwork on the case already. Plus, two or three guys in the service know. Too many people to make this thing disappear, if that's what you're thinking." That is what I had been thinking, and Barack could see it on my face. "What about his family?" I asked. They're planning the funeral. We've left them in the dark about everything." "Let's keep it that way, at least for now," I said. "I'm not asking for a cover-up, just a little discretion. They don't need this. Let them make their peace first. If we hint that there's a national security interest at stake here, we can stop it from spilling into the papers, at least until after the funeral. In the meantime..." "Yeah?" "You should look into getting some private security. I just walked right up to your house. Your backyard motion light was out, too." He tossed a light bulb to me. "You really ought to replace this with a compact fluorescent or an LED. They cost more up front, but pay for themselves after just a few years." "Thanks," I said. I turned back to my house, then paused. The old bulb was, of course, from the motion light on the back porch. Of that much, I was sure. However, the socket was more than 12 feet above the porch. I couldn't reach it without a ladder. "Wait, how did you..." I glanced over my shoulder, but no one was there. Barack had disappeared back into the inky darkness, same as he'd come, leaving nothing behind but the stale smell of smoke.
I like the compact fluorescent thing got me.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. All right, I think that's good enough for examples.
Yeah, and like, so again, we're giving this a point, right?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
So, and like, you know, the next category, Tereblo's presence. He's out to lunch, man. Like,
hang on, let me call him. One sec.
Okay, let's see what he's up to.
Look, man, even the Eldritch Horrors need a vacation sometimes. He's out of the office. Tereblo, I don't know. I don't know what he does in February. I don't know. I think he's on an island with a mojito somewhere in the space-time continuum.
Is he holding on to, like, 10 different mojitos with all his, like, centipede legs?
Yes.
Or tentacles?
Yes. And all the mojitos are all flavors because they exist in multiple dimensions, so...
Yes.
Yeah.
The simultaneously the best and the most insane mojitos you've ever had.
Actually, no, sorry, they'd be margaritas. It's more common to have multiple flavors of margaritas. So yeah, you'd have like a Tajin margarita, which I've had, incredible. Like, you know, just your regular old lime or lemon. You've got, you know, Baja Blast.
Scream flavored.
No, Baja Blast pie margarita specifically.
That's the one.
Salt rim. Anyway.
Scream rim.
I got some screams on that rim. I don't know why it's getting me. Yeah, there's nothing uncanny or horrific or disturbing about this, like, you know, except for the, you know, glorification of potential war criminals. But, you know, that's fine.
That's an everyday normal Earth dimension stuff, right? Like, that we don't need a chaos god to have that happening. We're just doing that on our own.
Yeah, this was regularly formatted. This does not have anything terrible. So I'd give this a one for escaping from, for coming to us while Terrible is on vacation.
Yeah. Okay, then, Paris, should this exist?
I mean, our should this exist questions, we have four things to address. It's, would readers of this genre enjoy this? Honestly, I want to say, yeah, if you like political satires and you lean left, you might like this. Even I mean, it's weird
if
to
you,
me,
if you like
but
cozy political figure fan fiction.
Yeah.
Like, out of all the things that we've read that is are billed as cozy mysteries, I actually felt like I was the most enveloped in a sweater with a hot mug of cocoa in this book in particular than any of the other ones we've read. I don't know exactly why that's the case, but I think, like, the relatively small scale and, like, it's a little bit cute. And the jokes landed.
Yeah.
That's really what helped.
Yeah, this, I really think, I mean, for me, it's a bit odd because I don't know who would want to read this, but I guess it was pretty successful. So there's people out there. Like, I would never pick this. I mean, that's how it ends up on the show, right? This is definitely in the category of, like, I remember seeing this in a couple stores and, like, people asking us to read it. I'm like, oh, no, that's going to be so dumb. It's going to be lame. It's not going to be well written. It's just going to be riding on its... the hype of its
name
characters. Yeah,
almost.
Right. But I was fucking wrong. I mean, I don't know that I would, like, recommend this, but I think if you do like political satire or, like, political thrillers, you would like this. It is, like, it does, I think, meet what its target audience is looking for.
If you want to play with your Barack and Joe action figures
right,
a little bit, then
right,
this is a perfectly wholesome way to do it.
Yeah, if you want to just like secede into a cocoon where you don't have to think about real problems and think about times that were better or something, yeah, sure. Do we feel as if the author's goal was met? Yeah, absolutely. Author knocked it out of the park.
Incredibly,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, he met his goal. And he made money on it, clearly.
So awesome.
Yeah. Does it add anything new, interesting, or novel? I mean, sort of. It's definitely like, I don't know that anyone else is out there publishing Barack and Joe stuff, but I mean, I guess it's...
They are, but it's the vampire lovers thing.
Yeah, it's the vampire gay lovers. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I mean, I want to say it's... It left me with a sense of newness because of how self-aware it was and how it made fun of Barack and Joe itself and political thrillers and noir crime drama. I just feel like it really, I don't know, just hit that self-awareness stride that I really appreciated. I don't know if it's brand new, but we certainly have not read anything that was able to have this much balance in it. So maybe that's why I feel it gave me a sense of newness, a sense of renewal, refreshment.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and lastly, did it take something from us? Nah, it was an easy read. It wasn't miserable.
No. You know, that's pretty simple stuff. You know, Paris, I sat here and I Googled Barack and Biden fan fiction.
Oh, no.
And there's a lot of Wattpad stuff over here.
What does it date though? What's the year on it? Was it after 2018 or before?
I don't know how to look up the published date on. I'm just gonna click read on this.
Can you
and
can
see
you
if
just
they
send
they
me the
a
link
date?
And I could probably see it.
Sure. I'm just gonna
put it in the Discord. Put it in the Discord.
I'm
please
doing it. Just relax.
Oh no,
I
was just
you're
like
so hungry for. Right, this is a selection from Wattpad. My eye is drawn to Obama-sama.
All right.
Which is seems to be, it's labeled as Biden x Obama x Tentacle.
Okay.
So perhaps a Terriblo crossover.
Oh. You're right. Yeah, why are there no dates on these? It's strange. Oh, 2021.
I don't think they care.
Yeah. All right. Is there a date filter? Who built this?
Oh,
fucking...
okay. Well, that's a comment down below. Oh, here it is. So if you click into the story and click read,
yes, yeah,
I it'll show you when it was last updated. So the Obama-Sama Biden X Barack X Tentacles was last updated on June 11th, 2021. So, you know.
Obama, Biden, Trump, Kanye.
What is Mr. President Quackity X Obama? Who the fuck is Quackity?
I do not know. Very smexy, spicy, hot, juicy fanfic. Reader, also I'll come to your house and Burger King logo.
Okay. I'm going to read this first paragraph of Quackity X Obama. The meat. Hey. I was walking down to the White House and I found a Laughed Beanies on the ground. Wondered. Who could this belong to? Double O. I shrugged it off and went to my Oville, O-V-I-L office. I had to get some paperwork done. No too long after, I heard a knock on my window. Hey, bitch, let me in, give me my beanie. I blushed profusely because the stranger at the window wasn't a half bad looking. He seemed to notice and took out a fucking hammer and smashed my window. That's it, the end. So, you know...
Okay.
That's what All this right. could have been, Paris. That's
exactly. Where we so been. we're very grateful that it was not that is the point we're getting at here. Thank you, Chris. That was magical.
Okay, so I believe that this should exist then, Paris. So
well,
we're giving
I think,
that also
about,
a point.
I think I'm gonna say this can exist. It's fine. I don't
it's allowed.
Yeah, I don't know that it's like I need this to exist. Like I don't think anyone needed this, but it's fine. It can be there.
So we should give this a zero then, where it's like it's acceptable?
No, I feel like it still gets a one for
Okay.
Yeah. Because it passed all the questions.
So Paris, we got a one for technical construction, we got a one for plot and characters, we got a one for prose and dialogue, we got a one for Trivial's presence, we got a one for should this exist. 5 out of 5. Based
wow.
on the rubric.
Andrew Schaefer.
One of the best books we've ever read.
You've done it, Andrew Schaefer. No, I wouldn't actually say it's one of...
Congratulations.
It's not one of the books, best books we've ever read. But it certainly scores higher than most books that we have read for the show.
Yes. Based on my rubric, which admittedly isn't the greatest way to grade books, but it's a way. It's what we're trying.
Yeah, it's not great, but we're doing it. Can we?
That's the theme of this whole show.
Yeah, it really is. So, Chris, can we fix it? Do we have anything to fix here? What needs to be fixed?
I mean, you said this earlier. If you just kind of tweaked that ending bit where the guy gets run over by a fucking train but still gets up to try to assassinate Joe Biden, I think it would be fine. Otherwise, like, I really wouldn't do much beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a parody of a lot of things. It makes fun of itself, its main characters, in just the right way, at just the right time. You know, there's maybe a big whiff here of, like, glorifying American politicians who maybe did some horrible shit in a very, I'm a liberal or moderate way, but I think it's self-aware enough to not go too far down the, like, worship path, and it's clearly making a big joke of everything, so I can handle it. I don't know, man. This one just hits different. Just hits different.
I agree. All right. Well, thank you, Paris, for joining me on this thankfully not vampire lover fan fiction with some political figures.
Yeah.
And thank you to the patrons and Ko-fi donors.
Well, thank you to Miles for recommending this. Thank you, Miles.
Especially Miles.
I'm honestly kind of glad we read this. I was so resistant to it for so long, but I'm glad we were forced into it. Thank you.
Thank you to all of our patrons, including our bad bookworms, Emily, Ben, Renee, Scott H., Donnie, Anya, Lacoris, Jakob, Jared, and Will. Our exacting editors, Rudy Bobuti, The Ugly One, Emmy, Harry 7, Funny Robot with Antennas, David, Martin S., Kieran D., and Greg. Our loathsome librarians, Yonka of the Void, the Taco Eating Unicorn, Robin, Austin, Patricia, Beast with the Least, Veronica, Luchek, Senia, and Arant. Our pesky publishers, Julius the Nice Dragon and Miles May. Extra special thanks to Miles again. And of course, our Ko-fi donors, our ever faithful Kiwi Thing, and Martin F. and Brenna, who helped relieve us of some terrible books. If you want some terrible books we've read for the show, you can buy them over on our Ko-fi page. Of course, this is limited to the physical copies that we had to purchase because there was no digital option. But boy, there's still plenty of them.
Yeah, we've split them between us. Even the ones we sold before my move a couple years ago, like... There's still a lot, and we recently got a very generous donation to the show from my friend Morgan, so there's more. We'll be reading them. It'll be a good time. But for now, please take the old ones off our hands, because I don't want them polluting my home any longer.
Same. Will anyone accept the challenge to become an arch-archivist this year? What heinous, monstrous tome will you force us to read through the power of money?
Be like Miles. Give us a pile of money and say, read this, and we will do it for you. And if you're an arch-archivist...
It does make it hurt less.
It does. It does make it hurt less. And if you're an arch-archivist, you can make us read something kind of long. So if you really want to put the screws to us this year, that's how you do it.
Oh, God, they're going to ask for another fucking Sword of Truth, aren't they?
No, they're going to ask for another fucking vampire fuckfest, because that's always what it is, Chris. That's always what it is.
God damn it. All right, Paris. Well, I'm off to solve a mystery with my political buddy. No, I'm not. I'm not a mystery solver. I don't think I'd ever solve. I'm the kind of guy that, like, if it takes a lot of effort to solve something, I'm like, I don't know if I really need to know. I'll remain ignorant.
We are the opposite, because I love mysteries. I love solving them. That's actually something I love about books and TV or movie, you know, any kind of media, is when I have to put the pieces together and figure it out before the end. I love solving a mystery.
I like a little bit of that in my fiction, but in my personal life, it's just frustrating. For me, the thing that drives me to do stuff is, like, skilling up. That's, I believe, the driver of my personality. Is I want to get better at doing a task and things. But, like, if it's a horrible mystery to solve, I usually come crying to someone else to help me figure it out.
I will say, you have recently had to solve the worst mystery of all. How SSDI work, or how SSI work, which is terrible.
We're not going to get into that right now. So that's part of why.
How government work? Maybe it's how government work, which is the worst mystery
in
America.
Fucking don't. Is actually what the deal is here.
Or it works in 9 different competing ways, and you have to figure out when it's doing which of the 9.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. All right, everyone. We'll see you later.
And Andrew Schaefer, please fix the government. Make the mystery make sense. Make the mystery make
sense. Yeah, right. SSDI mystery.
Actually, yes. Do that.
All right, Paris. I'll catch you next time.
All right. Bye, Chris.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Terrible Book Club. Terrible Book Club is an independent podcast produced by your hosts, Paris and Chris. Sound design and audio editing by Chris, with sound effects and music by Epidemic Sound and sometimes also Chris. Our theme song is Kiss by Yearn, which is, you guessed it, actually, also Chris. You can find more of his soothing synthy sounds on Bandcamp at yearn.bandcamp.com. Do you want us to review a book of your choice on the show? Do you want access to some extra audiovisual weirdness? If so, become a patron at patreon.com/terriblebookclub. If you'd like to send us a one-time tip instead, you can do that at ko-fi.com/terriblebookclub. You can also support TBC for free by sharing the show on social media, following our accounts on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or Goodreads, telling your friends about your favorite episode, or by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or anywhere else on the internet. To send us book recommendations or your adorable pet photos, send an email to terriblebookclub@gmail.com.